I was lying on the floor in the desert. I realized that I was in pretty bad shape. People gathered around me saying things. I couldn't speak because my jaw was completely messed up, but I knew something really bad had happened. And I thought that my life was going to be taken from me.
Today, we're talking to Cyrus Rustin, a former Royal Marines commando who faced a near-death experience in the desert during a deployment. This event became the catalyst for radical personal growth and led to founding a thriving fitness business.
Learn how you can adopt Cyrus's mindset of no plan B. But don't worry, no near-death experience is required. We are confident his journey will ignite your passion to start making even the smallest changes in your life, such as persisting towards goals despite obstacles or reframing failures as lessons learned.
Join us, whether you're recovering from a near fatal accident or need more clarity on how you can start a business or side hustle.
Stick around until the very end and cultivate a purpose-driven existence with the courage to start rewriting your story.
Let's dive in.
Welcome to Rewrite Your Story, the podcast where change begins with you.
We're your hosts, Stephen and Charlene.
As professional coaches and mentors trained in various modalities, we have helped hundreds of people
bridge the gap between the person they are
and the person they want to be.
We bring you conversations with real people who have overcome real setbacks.
You will walk away with practical steps to find more clarity, alignment, and success in any area you want to improve.
So join us and discover how you have the power to overcome, to change, and to rewrite your story.
So pick up the pen. Your new chapter starts now.
We've got Cyrus all the way from Dubai, originally from the UK, and I'm just can't wait to dive straight in. So Cyrus, welcome.
Welcome, Cyrus.
Thank you so much. Really happy to be here.
But take us right from the beginning where your journey started.
My story really started when I was a young teenager and my parents went through a divorce and I found myself living with my dad, my two sisters and brother. Went with my mum and they moved to the opposite side of the country. So I completely lost contact with them. I built up a couple of beliefs as someone would at that age to kind of protect themselves. One is that I'm actually really strong and one is that relationships don't work. And I started going down the wrong path a little bit from that point. I was smoking weed, drinking alcohol, getting arrested, not going to school. And it all changed one day when a friend of mine walked into school with a photo and he showed me this photo, which was his older brother. And he just happened to be a Royal Marines commando. He had a commando green beret on. He was in the uniform and he was on exercise somewhere. And I knew immediately that that was my escape out of this life that I was in that I wanted to get out of. It was joining the military. And because I saw that photo, it was specifically, I want to become a Royal Marines commando. So at the age like 12, 13, I started training obsessively with fitness in order to get fit enough so I could become a commando. And the Royal Marines Commando training is one of the longest, hardest military training courses in the world, from civilian into military. So I walked into the recruitment office when I was 15 and 9 months old on the day, because you had to be 15 and 9 months old to apply to join. The guy laughed at me and said, "No, you're too young." I said, "No, I'm not 15 and 9 months old." They let me in and training, going through commando training at that young age wasn't easy because I was so young. I was underdeveloped. The pass rate for young teens is very small and I kind of had no other option. There was no plan B. And this was a big lesson for me going through training at such a young age. It wasn't easy. I failed multiple times in the training itself. It took longer than what it needed to be. I got injuries. I got a massive infection in my leg. I failed the commando test at the end of training 3 times before I eventually passed. And that taught me a valuable lesson that if you set no plan B in your life and you really either do or die, you'll eventually get what you want. And it's not going to be easy. You're going to find a lot of barriers in your way. But at that young age, as a 16-year-old experiencing all that, it stayed with me. And I try not to set a plan B as much as possible now, because I realized those lessons. In 2006, I went to Afghanistan. And this is kind of a big story in my life. This is one of the biggest kind of learning moments in my whole life. I got hit by a truck and I sustained some injuries. Now, in the moment, I didn't know what had happened. I just thought, okay, head's been hit. Fine. Turns out I completely crushed my right eye socket. I broken my jaw in three places, and I broken my skull all over, basically. My head had been crushed in between two trucks. And I was lying on the floor in the desert. I realized that I was in pretty bad shape, blood, you know, dripping out of my eyes, ears, nose, mouth. People gathered around me saying things. I couldn't speak because my jaw was completely messed up, but I knew something really bad had happened. And I thought that my life was going to be taken from me. And I wasn't in any pain, but I was screaming out of frustration because I was like, 21, this is it. You get a dream clarity when your life's about to be taken from you. Extreme clarity. No ego. Just, this is it. What have you done? It's time to go. They took me to the hospital, figured out that I had these injuries through some scans, put me to sleep, and I fell into a coma. So at this point in the military, when this happens, they have to tell the parents that or the next of kin, basically, if it's your wife, husband, parents, whatever. At the time, it was my dad. I have to tell them that, you know, they're going to die or they've died. So that whole thing happened. They said, we're going to fly you out there. He's in a bad way. I actually woke up from the coma and they said, oh, he's awake now. He's not going to die immediately. So they didn't fly my dad out to see me in Afghanistan, and I'm glad they didn't. Like, looking back, you'd think, oh, crap, just fly the damn dad out there to see the guy. He's in a bad way, but I'm glad they didn't, because this is where things get interesting. I'm in hospital. I'm in intensive care for 2 weeks. They're keeping me alive. They're doing multiple head operations. It was all a bit of a blur because I had my head smashed in. I wasn't thinking too straight. I couldn't see properly. I couldn't hear properly. I had tubes down my throat. They tied my arms down because I was trying to yank the tube out of my throat. So they tied me down. I was just there, you know, and I was sleeping. And for a lot of the time, actually, it's crazy what your body does in extreme, you know, trauma like that. It just wants to heal. I was sleeping maybe 23 hours a day. On the second operation, a little bit of a funny story. I woke up from the operation, and this is the first time I felt pain since the incident. This is maybe like 8 days after. I'm still in intensive care, still got all the tubes and everything coming out of me. I woke up from the operation on the operating table. All of the nurses and doctors, everything is still around me. I'm supposed to be awake. I didn't just wake up, you know, when they were operating on me, they'd finished the operation. I was completely naked, lying on a aluminium kind of operating table. And I had this pain in my head, like extreme pain and a ringing. And I said to myself, okay, I understand why I've got a headache. I've just operated on my face. I understand why I've got this ringing in my head, but Jesus Christ, I'm cold. Can someone give me a blanket? I was shivering, like shaking, vibrating. And like, can no one see that I'm like dying here? Put a blanket on me and turn the AC off or something. They eventually got me stable and they moved me to another hospital. It was an old military hospital where I was to recover. And I spent the best part of 6 weeks in this hospital. It was two weeks intensive care, 6 weeks recovering before I could fly home. Now, up until this point, I had a very strong belief that I was strong, okay, that it was from my parents divorcing. I kind of woke up the next day and I was like, oh, mum's just left. Sisters and brother have gone, but I'm fine. So I carried that belief. And through commando training, when I was failing and I was going for all this stuff, I was mentally off. I always told myself, I have the ability to see through these hard times and know that it's going to get better eventually. So I actually got an award in commando training. It's called a Diamond Award. They give it to a couple of recruits in each group that show the best recruits, basically. They're the leaders. I got one when I was that young. It's nothing to do with leadership. I had no leadership at that age. But I had the ability to keep my chin up and smile and try and lift up the morale of the rest of the group. When we were the coldest, the tiredest, the wettest, the most miserable, I would keep a smile on my face because I knew in a few days or weeks, we're going to be back on camp. We're going to be warm. We're going to be eating food, laughing about how tough this was. But in hospital, I'd lost that ability. My face was like, my head was massive. It was completely black. It was all screwed up. They'd operated on me. I didn't know if I was going to look the same. I didn't know if I was going to be able to see properly. All my vision was doubled. I couldn't hear properly. I couldn't really think straight. I was feeling sorry for myself. Now, in the room that I was in, there was one other guy that was in a bed. It was a big room. It was about 20 beds, but it was only one other guy in there. He was clearly disabled and he was clearly in distress. And this elderly guy would walk into the hospital every day. He would come to my bed and ask me if I was okay. He was a very pleasant older man. He was smiling. How are you? I had my jaw wired shut at this point, so I couldn't talk, but I would just make some noises and he would go and see this guy. After like 5 days of this, like this guy across from me, he had no control of, he couldn't feed himself. He couldn't go to the bathroom himself. He was making noises. He was trying to bite himself constantly. But I got intrigued and I wrote on my piece of paper, what the nurse, you know, what's the deal with the guy? And she said, oh, he was involved in an incident a few months back and he was driving a car with his mum and his sister in the car. It was quite a serious accident. His mum and sister died. He's lost all function of his body. However, his mind is still clear. The reason why he keeps trying to bite himself is he's trying to kill himself because he's guilty that he killed his mum and sister. And the older gentleman that comes to see him every day is his dad. And I was like, whoa, hold on a minute. This kind, looked happy old man that was coming to my bed with a smile on his face and asking me if I was okay, just lost his wife, his daughter, and his son was disabled for life. And I couldn't process that. I just didn't understand it. And then I immediately stopped feeling sorry for myself. And I was like, wow, this is insane. I can't believe these two humans are going through this. I've got a little scratch on my head and I'm feeling sorry for myself. So that immediately got me out of my funk. And what else it did was I managed to, instead of playing the victim in all this, I managed to kind of step outside myself and see that, okay, you've been through this event, but you will get over it. Like you get over it. Like everyone gets over everything else. And the incident was running through my head, like repeat. It was running through my head every second of the day I was going through this incident. And I believe it was happening. It would have happened anyway. I believe that when you go through something that traumatic, it's probably looping in your brain somehow, right? Physically, there's some kind of loop there. But also, I believe that I was trying to get, the universe was trying to give me a lesson. It was like, you've been through all this for a reason. Learn the damn lesson I'm trying to teach you. And I had not got it yet because I was feeling sorry for myself. I was playing victim. But when I could take myself out of the situation and kind of go through it, I ran through the incident again a few days later in my mind. And I realized when I was lying on the desert floor, I was screaming out of frustration that I had not lived my life. I was 21, been to school, been in the military, hadn't really done anything. So my life was over and I was just devastated, completely devastated, regretful, but like, oh my God, I haven't done anything. So I realized, oh, that moment when I'm about to die is going to happen again. And I don't want to feel like that. So from now on, I better start doing something because I don't want to feel this massive regret again when the time comes that I'm actually going to die. So I got a unique perspective on life from almost dying. If they would have left me there on the desert after the injury, I'm sure an hour or so, I would have been brown bread, you know. And so this long period of recovery started after that, but the lesson stayed with me. And when I think I'm going through something challenging, when I think the universe is out to get me and why is this happening, or a bang my toe or whatever it is, emails, financial situations, whatever, I always think back to the guy in the hospital bed. I think he's out there somewhere, right? So I've got nothing to be angry about. And I'm not saying I'm this like holy guy that floats around, not getting frustrated at life. I get frustrated. I have my moments of doubt. I think the universe is against me sometimes when I know it's not, but it kind of stays with me, you know, that moment.
Wow. That's a very powerful story and very heart-wrenching as well. There's so many questions and so much we can unpack with that. Can I ask how long was that healing process? I guess the physical healing process is one thing, but there's also the mental healing process.
Yeah, it was about 8 months.
8 months.
8 months after it when I started feeling normal again. Yeah.
Wow.
Physical and mental.
Yeah. Okay. And obviously you were discharged or you left at that time, the Marines?
Well, funny story. I had already put my notice in to leave, because I wanted to travel around the world. I actually had my interview in Afghanistan a few weeks before the incident with the commanding officer. And it's a leaving interview. When you put your notice in to leave, the commanding officer interviews you. And I said, I want to leave. He's like, what do you want to do? I said, I want to travel the world. So how are you going to travel the world? I was like, I don't know, but I just want to see the world not in uniform. I'll figure it out. He said, I think you're making a big mistake. Well, I'll make the mistake. I was young. I literally wanted to go around and party and whatever else, right? Meet people and just get out there. The incident happened and one of the vehicles that hit me wasn't supposed to be on the road. It wasn't supposed to be used. It was broken. when I went through all my healing, I sought legal advice and the lawyer told me, absolutely, you have a case because this was avoidable. You weren't supposed to have your head smashed in. If the vehicle was working properly, you wouldn't have been in that situation. So I got a payout from the military and that payout allowed me to travel the world for 4.5 years and not worry about money. So again, the incident happened for me. There's no way I would have been able to afford all that. And I got out of it quite luckily. I mean, I can still see double if I look to my far left and, you know, my brain went through all that. There's a risk of meningitis, I believe, when I get older because of all that. But for the most part, I'm fine. I've got a few scars and my jaw sticks out a little bit, but for the most part, I'm okay. So it was a blessing in disguise. Absolutely.
You know, from your traveling and obviously, you know, that probably played a big part in the healing process as well. And in your mental health, you also spent some time in Thailand and you learned Muay Thai. Is that correct? Muay Thai?
Yeah. Muay Thai. Yeah.
Yeah. Muay Thai. Tell us about that experience and embracing that different culture.
Muay Thai was something, to be honest, that I did because one of my best friends had been doing Muay Thai and he was very good at it. He was tall, got long legs, long arms. He's built perfectly for it. And I had said enough of seeing all his photos and videos. And I said, damn, I need to do that. So I'm not tall. I don't have long arms and long legs. So I'm not built for Muay Thai. Although there's guys that don't have long arms and long legs that are good at Muay Thai. I just didn't fit it. And I had a few fights. And on the second fight against an American guy, he severely broke my nose. If I showed you the photo, you'd laugh. Like the nose was literally here. And I said, you know what? Considering everything I've been through, this isn't for me. We need to stop this. And I just kept doing what I loved, which is fitness. I always loved the challenge and it was a great experience. And going in the ring and fighting another man, you know, toe to toe is an incredible experience for someone. And I do believe there's a lot of benefits to doing that. But yeah, I had my experience and I wouldn't do it again.
We learned your lesson.
Yeah.
Earlier on when you were telling your story and you mentioned that you then saw your family on the other side of the UK after 20 years.
Yes. So there was a handful of times where we connected. Basically from the divorce, mum left with 2 sisters and brother to the opposite side of the country. And other than literally a handful of times, I didn't want anything to do with my mum. And I guess I didn't want to have anything to do with my sisters and brother because it brought up the feelings of the divorce that I'd not really dealt with. I'm guessing my wife told me when we got married that I'm not going to marry you unless your family is invited. So we invited them. And that was one of the handful of times I met them and we spoke and stuff, but I wasn't interested. I was like, no, I'm going to say minimum to them. Now, years later, my marriage started to unravel. There was a big difference between me and my wife. We were having fights all the time. It got to the point where we were probably about to get divorced. I had multiple opportunities to leave after fights and stuff. I didn't know what the issue was. The issue was me. I didn't know the issue was me, but something kept me with her because I loved her. I thought she's an amazing woman, but I had this voice in my head. It was literally a voice and it was a thought of divorce. It was like, leave the wife. And I was thinking, how can I do it? And I'd run through it in my mind every day. Like, how am I going to do it? What am I going to say? What's going to happen? It was just on repeat. I was reading a business book at the time and it was actually the founder of Lululemon. The founder that wrote this book, I was obsessed with business books at the time. And he said he will always look at his life as before the Landmark Forum and after the Landmark Forum. Have you guys heard of the Landmark Forum?
Yeah.
Have you done it?
No, but we've got many friends that have done it. Yeah.
Right. So you're familiar. This is perfect. You two are the first people ever. And I've told so many people about this that have actually even heard of it, which is great because you understand. Yeah,
two of our closest mentors have gone and they speak into our lives. They've gone right through the Landmark Forum and have spoken a lot into our lives. Yeah.
I tell you, it's nothing to do with business, by the way. I mean, this guy says in his book that it was one of the reasons why Lululemon was so successful. So I went online and I said, damn, this really that good? In 2 weeks' time, the Landmark Forum was in Dubai, the first ever. I paid for the thing without even blinking. I didn't even read the information. I just went, yeah, I'm going. Carried on reading the book, right? Yeah. So I show up on day one and I realized immediately, like, this has nothing to do with business. What the hell is this guy talking about? And they were telling us some information. You're not allowed to take notes. You're not allowed to eat that much, really. They don't give you much time. You just sat in a freezing cold room listening to one human speak. You are not bored. But I got home after the first day. It was okay, but I don't know if I'm going to go back. You know, it's not really what I wanted. But something inside me was like, yeah, you need to go back. Like, this is, you don't necessarily want this information. You need it. Did the second day. On the second day, they said, if you don't have a relationship with your parents, you got to call them. You got to make it up. Like, you can't live life without having that relationship if they're still alive. If they're dead and you still had some like grudges or whatever when they die, close your eyes, speak to them and finish it. Like, just squash it and move forward with your life. I didn't call anyone. I was like, hey, don't worry. I'm calling my mom. What are you talking about? No way. Carried on with my day. Went to the third day. Now, this is where things get interesting. They said, you're going to have the biggest realization you've ever had in your life at like 4 p.m. or something. It's like, okay, going through the information. We're doing some stuff. Things are getting heated. I'm not feeling anything, like zero, like nothing. It's like an hour to four. It's like 3 p.m. I'm like, there's no way I'm getting this realization. It's not going to happen. Kept telling myself that at 4 p.m. on the minute, on the second. I don't know what stuff they did, but it was like bullet hitting me in the head. I was just like completely just knocked back. And it's hard to explain, but it's like they showed you a mirror and you saw yourself, why your personality is the way it is. Why are you the way you are? It's because of all the stuff, all the experiences of your childhood and being an adult. And you've adapted these stories, these processes, these beliefs around your experience. And you don't need to carry it with you if you don't want to. You can drop the baggage and be whoever the hell you want to be moving forward. Now, it was like that in a feeling. It's hard to really explain. I learned on the forum that the voice inside your head is not you. So like, okay, so I'm driving away and I'm listening to the voice in my head and I'm like shocked how negative this voice is. I'm like, how have I not noticed this voice in my head before? This is insane. It's just like this negative, consistent voice in my head. And I was like, oh my God, this has been ruining my whole experience of life, I guess. So then I put two and two together and was like, okay, well then this voice telling me to leave my wife is not me. Why is it happening? Still, we're not able to fully grasp that I had, the problem was me, right? It was my wife. My wife was the problem, not me. So I went to therapy and therapist, he took me through like 8-9 sessions and we had like one or two sessions left. And the answer was like at the tip of my tongue, but I still couldn't say it. It was like my ego was having the last like, no. And he was being very kind, let's say. And he said, Cyrus, do you get it yet? I was like, damn. Okay. And then literally from that moment, I never got a single word, a single voice, a single thought ever again about divorcing my wife. It was literally like gone, like magic. And now me and my wife have the best relationship ever. We have a son, and that never would have happened if I didn't sort my shit out, basically. And now I tell everyone to go on the Landmark Forum. Nobody listens to me because they don't believe how good it is. But seriously, they do some stuff. It's been going since the 70s. 2.5 million people have done it. And still nobody, and most people don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned the Landmark. We, as I said, we know a lot of people that have done it. Yeah, and we took a different path with neuro-linguistic programming and hypnosis and all that. But I know it's done some great work with a lot of people. So thank you for sharing your experience. Did you manage to call your mother?
Yeah, after I got the realization, driving home, I called her. And the way they told you to handle the conversation was, you don't expect anything back from them. You just say, I'm sorry. I want to build a relationship moving forward. And that was what I said. And it was a massive weight off my shoulders in that moment. It was like, boom, gone. And I have a relationship with my mom now. It's probably not as strong as someone, because it was so many years, right?
Yeah.
We were apart. It's probably not as strong as someone that's been with them for that time, but it's a relationship. She comes to see me in Dubai sometimes. We talk. So it's good.
It's so good.
You, in your bio, when we got to know you, you talk about a trip to Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Amsterdam.
It was Amsterdam, yeah.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this trip. Tell us about this trip.
Yeah. So have you guys tried psilocybin?
No.
Okay.
Cool. I want to hear all about your experience.
Right. Well, I'd done the Landmark Forum and I'd done some of the seminars and things around the world because I like to I feel like every time I do something outside of my normal routine, I get so many insights and I realize a lot about my life. Happens a lot on planes as well, by the way. I get on a plane long haul and it's just like downloads, you know? So I was hearing a lot about psilocybin retreats, and I didn't really have anything that I needed to go there for, apart from like, I just want to try this thing. Like, I'm hearing so much about it. I'm watching the documentaries. I don't take drugs or anything like that. I don't drink alcohol, right? I'm a fit guy. So I go on this retreat. I signed a company called Kiyumi, and it's like a full experience, right? It's not just go there and take the thing. It's like you do this, you go there, you meet everyone and do all these activities that make you feel a bit silly. And it's all just to make you feel comfortable around everyone in the group, right? You do all the dances and everything. Stuff I never do this kind of stuff, right? I had to stare at a stranger in the eyes for like 5 minutes straight. That's the hardest thing ever. You think, yeah, easy. No, it's not easy. Like after like a minute of staring this stranger in the eyes, you start feeling like going red and embarrassed and all kinds of things. Well, on the day of, you take the psilocybin, and wow, just so much that I could tell you. But the feeling, it's like you've just got like love flowing through your veins. At least that's how I was feeling it initially. Pure love. I was dancing and had all these feelings, and I was having these visuals as well as having the feelings. I was humming to the music, and the hum had turned into this thing that I could see, and all these like things were coming off it. Well, there was one particular moment where the concept of Cyrus, it's like Cyrus was there and I understood what Cyrus was. It was me and all my experiences, my personality just went pop. And I was confused. I was like, what? And I've heard of this happening. People say ego death, right? That people like die sometimes, they fall off cliffs a lot. For me, it just slipped away. Like Cyrus just went, and I was so confused for about 5 minutes. And I was trying to remember, I'm like, sure I know what Cyrus is. I forgot everything. I forgot that I was a human on Earth, that I was just this like energy, and I was flying through the universe completely free. And one of the facilitators tapped me on the shoulder and asked me if I needed more of the psilocybin, because they want you to have no foot in reality. That's the whole point. It's a therapeutic dose. It's a heroic dose. I was away in the universe flying around somewhere. It felt like she was pulling me back to Earth with this tapping. And I remember coming back, and I still didn't know who I was, what I was, where I was. I couldn't remember, but actually I remember saying, do you need more? And I was like, no, I don't need more. Blew back off into the universe. And then I ended up being me looking at my son. And I was also in my son looking at me. And to the next to me, it was me as a baby, remembering what it's like to be a baby. And I was looking at my mom, and I was also in my mom looking at me. So I was in all four bodies. I was in me, my son, in me as a baby. And the realization I got was, don't forget how much you used to love your mom. You were a baby at one point. You know how much you love your son. That's how much your mom loves you. And you remember what it's like to be a baby loving your mom. And I was also in my son looking at me. So it was like this, it was just showing me like, hey, don't forget, you were a little baby once looking at your mom like your son looks at you. And another kind of prominent bit of the experience was I felt like I was a warrior, like a tribal warrior. I had a spear, and this was after the initial universal flying around thing. I'd kind of like come back to Earth and remembered where I was and what I was doing, but I was sat at the end of the bed and I had this feeling like you can do anything you want. You're a warrior. Just pick whatever thing you want to do in life, go for it, and you can do it. So those are probably the two biggest takeaways from the experience. And I highly recommend it, because after it, it's kind of like this clean out of your mind, that you've emptied everything out and you can start fresh, kind of like forum almost. Yeah. Highly recommend it if you're thinking about doing it.
Thank you for sharing, because it's such a controversial thing here in Australia. There's so many mixed reviews and so I'm really glad that you've shared it. And actually I've spoken to my yoga instructor about it as well, who's had a very similar experience. So I'm liking the fact that you're confirming her experience as well. So, and what she experienced as well. Cyrus, this has all happened, but in the meantime, you're living in Dubai. You've moved to Dubai.
Yeah.
and you become a successful fitness coach and have a successful fitness business and gym. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I moved to Dubai and I was working as a personal trainer, earning $1,500 a month. And I had this feeling that I wanted to do something, but I wasn't yet doing it. I was just bumming around. I had this job. I wasn't really doing much personal training. I was going to the beach whenever I had a spare minute. I wasn't acting towards my goal. And I moved to Dubai from Thailand because I wanted more in life. I met my wife. She was earning massive amounts more money than me. She's good looking. She's confident. And I was like, okay, this doesn't feel right. This is my kick up the ass to do something. So I started a business and it's been almost a 10-year journey now. I started my first business and I got thrown into from being this like, I was a Royal Marines commando, but I was also a beach bum for 4.5 years, right? So I hadn't really worked. And then I got thrown into this situation where I was now running my own gym. So I got to learn by doing everything about business, how to speak to people, customer service, marketing, systems, hiring, firing, the full thing. That come to an end after 3.5 years. And I was thinking what else to do. I was in London with a client. I actually worked for the royal family here as well. Very lucky and privileged to have this role. I was in London with my client and I found a gym, a concept that I thought, oh, this would be good in Dubai. So then I approached one of my friends who's one of the most successful people I know, or the most successful person I knew at the time. And he was advising me, go and do some more research, gather data, go and do more classes. And eventually on that journey of research, he decided like, you know what? Cyrus is really passionate about this. I'm going to go in with him. And he told me, mate, instead of getting investors, you just come up with half the cash. I'll come up with half the cash and we'll jump in together. I was like, okay, cool. I didn't have all the cash. I borrowed a bit, got a bit, you know, eventually got the money. We'd invested some. COVID hit, boom, lockdown. And I remember standing outside of the works that was going on, right? The fit out. And my business partner telling me, look, we're going to have to go into this thing called lockdown. And I was like, are you crazy? But I was also worried because 99% of the time, if Lee says something, it comes true. So sure enough, a few weeks later, we're in lockdown. And I remember transferring money from my personal account into the business account, thinking, I am never going to see this money again. I'm going to have to pay all these people back that I borrowed from some other way because this business is not going to make it. We opened a week after lockdown was lifted. And so the first year of business for us was tough. But about 6 months in, kind of knew we were onto something because we were getting good feedback from people. And it's a boxing and fitness class, which was our first concept that we opened. People kept saying, this is my therapy because we'd just been through. Remember the mindset that we were in right back then?
Yeah.
They would come in, they would do fitness, they would punch the punching bag, they would leave with a smile on their face. I actually changed the tagline of the business to boxing is therapy because that's what people kept telling me. Since then, we've grown into 3 more spaces in the same building. We have a cafe, all these different concepts. We have 600 members. We're doing way over $1 million in revenue a year. And we're actually on the verge of hopefully signing a deal where we can expand into other locations in the Middle East and around Dubai. So it turned out well, but it was not easy. It was tough. It's business, I guess. All business.
Success comes at a price. So what are some of the sacrifices, the personal sacrifices that you've had to make this work?
Time is obviously the one that sticks out the most from this. Yeah. I got married to my wife. We didn't go on a honeymoon. I flew direct married in Sri Lanka and then flew directly back to Dubai to work on my first gym. And it's a lot of time in the beginning stages of business. So that's probably the main one. But I'm glad I've done it. I think it's worth it in the end, you know? So the only thing I'm battling with now, I mean, I've got quite a good balance. I see my son a couple of times a day, spend the weekend with him. I feel like as a man, our job and our commitment to our family is to provide. So I can't sit with my son all the time. But I was having this conversation with a client this morning. He's a successful business owner. I feel like all men have this pull, work, kids. We need to provide for our family. We also need to be there for our family. It's a fine balancing act that if you tilt one way more than the other, if you're not earning the money to provide for your family, then your whole family suffers. But if you're not around to see your kids, then the relationship suffers. And I feel like it's It's this, and I'm playing this as well. I'm doing it all the time when I'm working. I feel like, oh, I want to go see him. When I'm with him, sometimes I'm like, okay, I've got all this stuff to do. So it's just a constant evolving learning for me. But ultimately, my financial goals are important to me, but they're not even close to time with my son, you know? So I feel like I've got a good balance at the minute.
Thank you so much.
How do you actually manage that mindful state when you're with each part? So when you're with your business, obviously a lot of people will be, like you said, in the business, they're thinking of their family, they want to be with the family, but then with their family, they want to be, they've got all the stuff they've got to do. How do you manage that mindful state?
It's exactly not doing that. It's when I'm at work, my wife sometimes will send me videos on WhatsApp of what she's doing with him, and I won't look at the videos. Because I'm like, nah, that's going to make me feel bad, and it's going to want to go home. Now, I'm quite lucky. My business is close to my house, right? So it's like a 10-minute drive, so I can pop back anytime. But the trick for me has been when I'm with my son, try not to have your phone with you, be in the moment with him, and you'll be surprised what little time it takes to really just have that connection and that moment with him. So as long as I'm present and I'm with him and I haven't got my phone with me, you know, you don't need, as a man, 5, 6, 7 hours. You can do an hour of quality and hearts full for the day, you know? So I just try and see him every day, at least once or twice, be present with him. And when I'm at work, try and be focused in that. And one thing I heard recently, I went to see a doctor, actually, who said something that really hit me. I can't remember his exact words. I wrote it down in my notebook somewhere, but it was like, the price of you procrastinating and not being productive, it's actually a price on your family, because the times you're not being productive in work, it's time away from your family. So you're actually taking, you're taking that time away from your family. And then when he said that, I realized so much about myself. I'm like, oh my God, I waste so much time in a day just doing mindless stuff. And for the rest of the lecture, I was just thinking about that one line you shared. I was like, oh my God, I need to change. And that was like 2 weeks ago. And I've tried to have more intent with what I'm doing since then. I'm like, do I need to be doing this right now? Is it important? If not, I need to be doing something else. So it's like, when I'm working, I need to be fully focused on the business and working and getting stuff done. Or I need to drive home and be with my son, because there's no point just sitting here, like spinning my wheels, not doing important work. So another thing I read recently was like, write down your top 3 priorities each day. Just like 1, 2, 3. Once you've done those 3 priorities for the day, everything else is a bonus. Or learn something or relax. You know, don't just do stuff for the sake of doing it.
That's great advice. Cyrus, your journey is so full. It's like you've lived many lifetimes. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Cyrus, we usually like to end off with a couple of really deep, hard-hitting questions. And one of those is, what advice would you give to someone who wanted to start to rewrite their life story?
I was lucky because I listened to the signs from the universe that I needed to change. You know, I was obsessed with business books and starting a business. So the universe popped a book on my lap, this book about the Landmark Forum.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that I speak to, men particularly, I don't know why, find it hard to see the faults in themselves, I guess, or the issues or the traumas or whatever they have going on. So my advice to someone would be, try and take a step back and feel and look at the signs that the universe is giving you. If you think maybe that you have an issue, you've got one, and it would be worth your time unraveling that a little bit, maybe feeling some uncomfortable emotions from whatever it is, but it's trying to just be self-aware, right? I wasn't self-aware, but I was lucky because the universe had masked it as something else, right? So I would encourage everyone to take a step back. And it's like I was speaking with a client this morning, and he said, I always knew that I needed to do therapy, but it's just one of those things that I kept like, oh, I'm busy, or he kept not prioritizing it. And 6 months had passed and he's still not done it. Now he was going through this extremely challenging time because he hadn't dealt with the underlying issue. So I would just say, whatever work it is that you need to do, get it done now so you can move forward and progress in life.
Right. That's really powerful. So basically what you're saying is, don't wait until life hits you like a ton of bricks. to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sweeping the issues under the mat's not rectifying the underlying issues.
Yeah.
You know, I believe the only way you can rewrite your story and move forward and progress and live your goals and dreams and whatever it is, you're not going to do that carrying all that heavy baggage that you picked up from childhood or whatever it is. Like, go back, feel the pain, do what you need to do, and then move forward.
Right. That's really good advice. Thank you so much, Cyrus. And if you could go back now and rewrite your life story, what would that look like?
I wouldn't change a thing. Would not change a thing. I would go back and experience absolutely everything that I went through it exactly the same. If I could be on the desert in front of those two trucks again, I would put my head in front of them, go through the same thing. It had to happen to me. I needed it to happen to me. And that's another thing, right? When what I've learned from going through these issues is that we always play victim initially. It's a natural response. Why is this happening to me? But I believe that the universe, again, I've said the universe a lot in this podcast because I do believe strongly that everything happens for a reason. And I do believe that when we are given challenges to overcome, it's for our own benefit. When we're going through it in the moment, it doesn't feel like that, but you have a vision of what you want to achieve in your life. Okay, in order to reach that, you need to change. You need to become a different person. You need to grow, overcome challenges. So those issues, those challenges, whatever you want to call them, that the life is giving you are opportunities to grow. They're not setbacks. That's a key mindset shift when something happens. Like I'm going through, everyone goes through some stuff, right? You have the issues that come in, whatever. Just change your mindset on that. Not, oh my God, this is happening to me. Why is it happening to me? No, okay. Feel like that initially, but then take a deep breath and think, okay, this is something I need to overcome and better myself so I can reach my goals, right? And become the person I need to be in order to achieve whatever you want to be, right? So that's key. And that's something that it took me a long time to get. And it was definitely advice that I would give others.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Cyrus, thank you for being so open and honest and sharing your story. You really have been an open book and vulnerable. So thank you so much. And if you want to know more about Cyrus and what he does and also his business in Dubai, follow him on Instagram at Coach Cyrus, and we'll have that link in the show notes as well. Cyrus, once again, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on the Rewrite Your Story podcast.
We hope you found this episode enlightening.
For more information on the topics discussed, please visit our website at stephenandcharlene.com.
Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform, share it with your friends, and follow us on social media at Stephen and Charlene.
Until next time, stay informed and inspired.
This is Stephen and Charlene signing off from the Rewrite Your Story podcast. Thank you and stay blessed.